Make a move until you've seen it, Zamudio. They debated the matter for the next hour, tossing simulations back and forth, arguing about the interpretation. They thought that their conversations were private, of course, but my agents had long ago placed bugs on the other ships, just as I assumed they had bugged my own. I listened, quietly amused, as the arguments grew more frantic and rancorous. It was no small matter to risk an antimatter detonation after a century and a half of travel. Under ordinary circumstances, they would have extended their debate for months, perhaps even years, weighing the significance of every small gain against every possible death. But all the while they were slowing down, with the Santiago pulling triumphantly ahead of them, and every instant that they delayed made that distance worse. "We've talked enough," Zamudio said. "We're initiating shutdown."
"Please, no,"
Armesto said. "At least let us think about it for a day, will you? And let that bastard creep ahead of us? Sorry, but we're already committed to a shutdown." Zamudio's voice became businesslike as he read status variables aloud. "Damping thrust in 5 seconds. Bottle topology looks stable. Constricting fuel flow. 3, 2, 1. What followed was only a howl of static. One of the new suns had suddenly turned nova, outshining its brethren. It was a white rose, edged in purple, which shaded to black. I stared at it wordlessly, marveling at the hellfire. A whole ship gone in an eye-blink, just the way Titus had told me the Islamabad had died. There was something cleansing about that white light. Something bordering on the pious. I watched as it faded. A breath of hot ions slammed into my own ship, a ghost of what had been the Palestine, and for a moment the status displays across the bridge quavered and ran with static, but the ships of the flotilla were now so far apart that the demise of one could not harm the others. When comms returned, I heard the voice of the other captain speaking.
"You bastard houseman," Armesto said. "You did that."
"Because I was cleverer than any of you."
"Because you lied to us, you piece of shit."
Now I recognized the voice of Omdurman. "Titus was worth a million of you, houseman. I knew your father. Compared to him, you're just nothing, dirt. And you know what the worst of it is? You've killed your own people as well." "I don't think I'd be quite that stupid," I said.
"Oh, don't count on it," Armesto said. "I told you our intelligence was good, houseman. We know your ship like our own."
"We have intelligence, too," Omdurman said. "You haven't got any damned tricks up your sleeve. You'll have to start slowing down or you'll overshoot our destination. Come to dead stop in interstellar space." "It's not going to happen like that," I said. This was nothing like the way I had planned it, but sometimes you just had to abandon the precise letter of the plan, following instead the broad outline, hearing the grand shape of a symphony rather than the individual notes. With Norquinko's assistance, I had made some modifications to my command seat. I flipped up a cover set into the black leather of the armrest, unfolding a flat, button-studded console which I placed across my lap. My fingers skated across the matrix of buttons, bringing up a map. It was the cactus-like schematic of the ship's spine, showing the sleepers and their corporeal status. Over the years, I had worked very diligently to separate the wheat from the chaff. I had made sure that as many of the dead as possible were collected together in their own sleeper rings, studded along the spine. It had been laborious work at first, for the sleepers died not according to my neatly devised plans, but in ways that were annoyingly random. At first, anyway. Then I